Of this Sefer, Perikid Aleph. We're doing over here, starting from Pasik Dalet through Pasik Zayin. We've gone through already four passes, the Mitzudais, Rashi, Radak, and Malbim. Today we're going to finish up a couple of loose ends, and then we're going to go further to continue. Let's take a look over here, at what it says in, in the Mamore Chazal. The Mamore Chazal, Pasuk and Pasuk, okay, Mamore Chazal, it's on page
817.
Page 818, correct. Okay, it's only one Mamore Chazal. That's it. All we have over here is one Mamore Chazal. And then we're probably going to go further. Is there anything else you wanted to do here? The Mincha Shai is usually very. Sometimes we don't. I skip most of the Mincha Shai. Okay, let's just do this one Chazal, then we'll go further. Okay. Okay, one short Chazal. Vo'egach shnei maklois. I took in my possession two maklois. Le'achad korasi noyam ulechad korasi choyvlim. Noyam el tamid echacham shabi eretz Yisrael. She man imin ze lo ze behalacha. Noichen yachad ume einim yachad ume sakin ze es divrei ze. The word noyam refers to the Talmidei Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael. They're pleasant, they have good midos. Choyvlim eilu Talmidei Chachamim shel Bavel, shemechablim makshim ze lo ze behalacha. Okay, this Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin is a very famous Gemara, and this Chazal takes this pasuk, compares the Talmud Bavli to the Talmud Yerushalmi. This is a very important classic Chazal. That in the Talmud Bavli there is violence. It's a violent Talmud. The Talmud Yerushalmi is very pleasant. What do you say? You're right. We have here cups. Here, one second. Mordechai, there are cups and the kitchen is still open.
Wonderful.
The kitchen is still open.
Chaperan
until.
Coffee?
No, not now. Not now. Right now I'm good. Right now, maybe later. Right now it's okay. So Chaperan until I'm sure it's a mistake. They probably should have locked it by now, but while it's open, Chaperan. Okay, so here we have the Choyvlim, we have the Choyvlim, and we have the Noyam, that the Talmidei Chacham and Eretz Yisrael are very pleasant. They learn the Gemara. What do you say, Mark? You have a nice word to say? Oh, very nice, very nice. And what do you say? Very nice. But what do you say? And you say, you don't agree. Okay, that's fine. You're right, and you're both right. How can you both be right? Yeah, and you're also right. Everyone, Shalom al Yisrael. That's how the Talmud Yerushalmi presents disagreements over a Mishnah, over a piece of Gemara. In the Bavel, it's just the opposite. Not the opposite, it's a very different approach. What do you say? I say this. Really, you say this? That, in my eyes, is a declaration of war. And you rally your troops, and you bang on the table and you scream and you present challenges and then there's a rebuttal and it gets violent. It's not called milchamtoy shel Torah for nothing. It's not called a war for nothing. And at the end, the goal is ve'es vohev besufa al tikri vohev ela vahav love. And through the dialogue, through the fighting, the disagreement between one another, at the end, the people become close. It's not like in real war. In real war, the more you fight, the more you hate each other. The more bombs, the missiles you launch at each other, the more hate, separation, the wounds are irreversible. But in Torah, the more you disagree, there's something magical. There's something which is lamala miderech hatev, which cannot be defined in words. It only can be understood in the spiritual world. That the more that you disagree with someone in the world of Torah, the more that you debate and you engage in dialogue, the more you come close to them. It's an incredible thing, which only is a revelation of the spirituality that is found within Torah. Is this true in other intellectual debates? If you go to a college, an Ivy League college, and there's a disagreement, some philosophical concept between different professors in the department, okay, different approach. Even look today in Corona, Go look at the different studies that have come out with Zelenko in his hydroxychloroquine.
Hydrochloroquine,
and all these different the debate in the science. What about the science and the studies and the approach? There's no love that comes at the end in these intellectual debates about what is the proper approach to discuss.
Is it a matter of love or is it a matter of tone?
Whatever, but no. What is the end?
But
what
in
is?
Eretz Yisrael, I think the word you could use is collegiality.
Collegiality. Why only Eretz Yisrael? That's a. It's an American.
I'm talking about.
Noam. Collegiality. You're very nice to each other in your intellectual discussions. In Bavel, they were not nice to each other. In Bavel, they launched. There was a war. There was a heated debate, and at the end of the debate. And at the end of the debate,
whatever you want from the kitchen, I'm going to close it.
They're closing the door of the kitchen now. The warning has been issued. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You see, I told you, it's just a matter of time until Baruch Hashem. Okay. In any event,
How do you sharpen a blade?
How do, by rubbing it against stone?
Or some rough surface.
The way you sharpen a blade is with a rough surface. That isn't Bavel. Now, this is a very interesting concept that over here, Chazal are telling us the more the people in Bavel would engage in debate and war, the more violent their arguments were. At the end of the day, the esvohev besufa. It led to love. It led to a closeness. Is that principle true in the secular world in intellectual debate? I don't think so. I can't tell you for sure, but I don't believe it to be true. If you have in the secular world, you have some disagreement over some philosophical concept or some idea and scientific idea, and you bring together all of the biggest world experts in the field, and they have a debate, and they engage in very serious and complex dialogue. When the debate is over, is there any love between the two sides?
It's not a machlokas l'shem shamayim.
That's all part. So it doesn't seem so. It seems that when a debate in the secular world over some intellectual issue, when the debate comes to an end, there's no love. In Torah, when there is a debate, Chazal say, "V'yes vohev b'sof." It's part of the masos. In the 48 masos, one of the masos was "V'yes vohev b'sufa."
There was that's in chukas.
But that was part of the journeys, right?
But in chukas.
Right. And when they traveled vohev b'sufa, and Chazal tells us, do not read the word vohev or vav, which means love, and the end of an intellectual debate, there is a closeness between the two parties. That is something which cannot be defined in this world. That only can mean that the debate is in the world of spirituality, machloikis war achieves the opposite result of war in the secular world, where the war brings closeness, love. In the secular world, the war brings separation, frustration, wounds, and complete. There's no reconciliation between the two sides. Okay, that is something that is very, very spiritual. Now, there's another very interesting Kabbalistic approach, Kabbalistic concept. This is pure Kabbalah, this idea, and just take it for whatever it's worth. We have a principle in Chazal called Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. Talmidei Chachamim, it is their quest to be Marbe peace in this world. Okay, that's their goal. Now, the question is, what exactly does that mean? So, according to the world of Kabbalah, what it means is, Again, watch out, this is pure Kabbalah, this is something which I have no understanding what I'm saying, I'm just repeating words. In this world, sometimes there's a decree in Shemayim, there has to be Melchama. Whatever that means, in Shemayim there are spiritual forces in this world which have a disagreement in heaven, and that disagreement somehow has to channel its way down to this physical world, and there has to be a war. There has to be strife and machloikis, disagreement and violence. And Talmidei Chachamim, they have the ability to sense that, although they may not sense it, unknowingly, but subconsciously, there is this acknowledgement that there is a war is breaking out. And when they engage in debate, in halachic debate, which Chazal defined as milchamtoi shel Torah, the war of Torah, where Talmidei Chachamim take different sides and become passionate in their disagreement with one another, and they attack, and they go on the defense, and they form allies, and they have what we call, again, Pshuto Kimashmo, Milchamtoi Shel Torah. That is a fulfillment of the Milchama that was meant to happen in this world.
Wouldn't you agree that it's much more than a quest for Shalom? It's a fact. Talmidei Chachamim marbim Shalom.
Really? Really?
Yeah, sure.
Well, in theory,
really?
Anyway.
In theory, maybe. But we,
no, the Chazal teach us that because that's it. That's
what
so.
Does that mean exactly? You see Talmid. Okay, okay, you're right. Ayin Pandim L'Torah. There's no question. What you're saying is Alder. I told you, what we're saying now is a Kabbalistic approach to this concept.
Simple, straightforward.
Okay.
But Kabbalistic is obscure.
Marbim Shalom Olam. Unfortunately, if you open up the newspaper, you go online, you will see that Talmidei Chachamim don't always be Marbim Shalom Olam. Sometimes they make more problems than there are, because they don't see eye to eye on many, many issues. And they don't get along, and there are some very ugly things that happen in this world. Because
as general rule, Chazal
okay.
this no, principle.
That's the theory.
Okay, so it's not very
theory,
nice, theoretical.
Okay,
Baruch Hashem, emuna pshuta. I agree with you, and it's definitely true,
over.
But there is also a principle of another Kabbalistic approach, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down to this world, for whatever the reason, there has to be war, and by Talmidei Chacham studying Torah, and engaging in Milchamta Shel Torah, that is the fulfillment of war that was meant to be in this world, would have cost people's lives, people would have died, they would have suffered, there would have been pain. And now, being that this war was fulfilled through dialogue and Torah, that it's been fulfilled, and it's not necessary any longer that people should be hurt, people should become poor, people should suffer all the consequences of real war that happens in this world. I'll give you another fair example. Chazal say, Ein ksuba beloy tigra. There's no such thing as a ksuba, the signing of a marriage document, that is not accompanied by a quarrel. Come to a wedding, chasen kala, they tutstadim, the tzarachasen, tzarakala. They don't agree on everything. Two families, are very different. No such thing. Hashem Shein Part Sufeim Shavas Kach Ein Deosem Shavas. No two people look alike. No two people think alike. And the families, two different families coming together, they're not the same. And when they make a wedding, there's going to be strife. Ein Kisuba Beloy Tigra. It's a Chazal. There is no such thing as the signing of a marriage document that is not accompanied by strife. So There was once a story, I think, by the Bariskas. There was the person, the Mechutanim, they come to the wedding, they come to the Chosen Tish, they come and they see each other, they shake hands, Mazel Tov, and one Mechutan says to the other, you know the tie you're wearing? I see you're wearing, you have a new tie for the wedding. I really don't like it. You couldn't find yourself a better tie for the wedding. This is ugly. All the ties, you had a purchase this ugly tie. It's ugly as sin. And the Mechudin looks at him and he says, what? How dare you insult me like that? So the other Mechudin says, Baruch Hashem, we gave the Satan his dinner. Chazal say, Ein kisuba b'loy tigra. We just fulfilled the tigra. We just now, there has to be a dispute. So Baruch Hashem, I insulted you, I insulted the tie. who can really care less about your tie? But I insulted your tie. So now it has been fulfilled. The Maimer Chazal, Ein Kesu B'Bloy Tigra, and from now on, it's going to be smooth sailing. Everything will be smooth.
This is a briska?
I think it's a briska. I think it's a briska maisa. The briskas. It's, we've given the Satan his portion. Okay, this is a Kabbalistic thing. You say by Mayim Achroinim. Why do you wash Mayim Achroinim? Zman hazeh. Same idea, because Melech Sedomus, because maybe in the salt, there is a granule of salt that came from Sedom, which if Chas V'Shalom comes into your eye, it can cause blindness. Okay, that's, so today Chazal said, there's no such thing as Melech Sedomus, it's not Motzi amongst us, so why do you wash your hands? Oh, other reasons, to clean your hands for benching, your hands should be clean. All right, and then there's the Kabbalistic approach. The Satan is jealous. Here you are, you're doing something that is so noble. You're eating like a mensch, you make brachas, you're going to say brachas amazon. The Satan is jealous. So the Satan, he wants to attack. He can't tolerate Klal Yisrael doing Hashem's ratzon. So it's a danger. So Satan, here's a gift. Here, you could have the Mayim Achrayim. I have no idea what those words mean. But it's a Kabbalistic concept, is that you give the Satan his portion. Ksuba is always going to be, it's destined, it's part of the curse of this world. Part of the world is the Mechutanim come together, marry off their children. There's always going to be some strife. That's just the way Hashem made this world. It's built into the blueprint of this world. It has to be like that. Why, we do not know. So give the Satan. Let the Satan have his portion. Insult your Mechudin's tie. Does that make a big difference? That's nothing compared to saying some of the other nasty fights that can break out. You know the old joke by a wedding. Come to a wedding and you see someone say, oh, how do you come to the wedding? Which side are you from? So the other fellow says, oh, I didn't know they're already fighting. I didn't know that there's already a fight. And there are two sides, and which side, you want to know which side I'm on? Oh, wow, that was fast. They just got married, and already there's two sides. Woo! Okay, this is the human nature. So let it be chal upon something that is insignificant. Take this concept and go a step further about milchamtoi shel Torah. By Talmidei Chachamim, engaging in halachic debate to the point where it gets nasty. It's choivlim. Choivlim. Oh, so the gezeira that in this world there should be milchama has been fulfilled. It has been fulfilled in the milchamta shel Torah. It is no longer necessary for a nation to launch a missile. It's no longer necessary to send an aircraft carrier to the Gulf to make trouble. It's no longer necessary because the gezeira of milchama has been fulfilled in the milchamtoi shel Torah. Memela, by Talmidei Chacham engaging in milchamtoi shel Torah, they are being marbim shalom ba'olam. They are fulfilling the need for milchama, so there's no longer a need for people to die, for people to suffer, for people's blood pressure to shoot up to numbers that are off the charts. It's no longer necessary because it's been fulfilled. Talmidei Chacham marbim shalom b'olam. They're called choivlim. Choivlim, they engage in milchamta shel Torah. And that milchama is not a earthly milchama. That milchama, spiritual milchama, leads at the end to love. It leads to even better relations between the two parties. There's a very beautiful story. I read this in the Soloveitchik Heritage. From the Soloveitchik Heritage is a book about, was written by Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik's sister. Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik had a sister. And she wrote this incredible book called The Soloveitchik Heritage, which some of the Soloveitchiks refused to read. They're very upset with this book because there are things there that really... I forgot.
Not Rakowski.
No, not Rakowski. Meiselman? No, I don't remember even. I don't remember. It's been a very long time since I read the book. It's an awesome book. I know I'm related by marriage distantly to the Soloveitchiks, and I know that many members of the family refuse to read the book because there are things in that book that are not for public knowledge. It's true, there are things there that it's no one's business, there are certain things there that it's no one's business to know what it says in that book. Absolutely true, without any question. Now you all even go read it. You should, it's a fantastic book, and you'll see right away, you'll see immediately, like, come on. You don't have to go hang up your dirty laundry for everyone to see. It's not necessary, there are certain things there. But in any event, the book is awesome. It's an awesome book describing the parents, the family of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. This is Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's daughter. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the famous Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And he had a number of children, and one of them was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was a Rosh HaYeshiva in Yeshiva University, came to America, and he had the highest share in Yeshiva University for many years. And when he passed away, his son, Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, took the yeshiva gave him his position. Only at the influence of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's mother, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's wife, Rav Yosha Ber's mother, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's wife, she was a Pesha Feinstein. She was Rav Moshe Feinstein's cousin, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Moshe Feinstein's cousin from the Feinstein family. And she was married to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and he came to America. He was a rabbi.
He has granddaughters. Rav Moshe had granddaughters named Pesha.
I have a cousin named Pesha. Also, everyone in the family has someone named after her. And so her daughter, the brother of Rav Yosha Ber Soloveitchik, wrote a book describing basically her life, the life of her parents, the history. It's a fantastic book. In that book, there's a story that blew my mind. She was a little girl, and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, I don't remember all the details, was a Rav for many years, somewhere in Europe or in Poland. I don't remember. He was a Rav in some little shtetl before he came to America, before he got a job in America as a Rosh Yeshiva of YU. He was a Rav somewhere, and he used to give a shiur in his home every so often, maybe once a week, whatever it was, and the Balabatim would come to the shiur. And Kidarkoi, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, being the son of Chaim Soloveitchik, what did he learn? Rambam! A Shver Rambam! He would learn a Shver Rambam, and he would give a shiur with fire and brimstone. The Balabatim came to his house, and he gave a shiur, and talk about the Rambam, a Shver Rambam, the steel in the Rambam, it's a kasha from a Gemara, from a Mishnah, and he would give up. Fiery shear. The Balabatim would sit around the table and they would fight and they would argue. It was mamish, as it says over here in this pasuk, Chovlim, Milchamtoi Shel Torah Pshutoi Kimashmoi. The author of the book, who wrote this book at that time, was about 3-4 years old. When these shiurim took place in her home, in her parents' home, she was 3-4 years old. And she had a little room She was in her room in the evening, and the father was giving a shiur, and they were screaming, and there was pounding on the table, and there were fireworks. And she heard it was, and she always heard her father come to defend the Rambam, to fight for the Rambam. And she writes there that she really thought that the Rambam was a real person. A real person in the community that the police were trying to arrest, that they were coming to get, and the people there in the community were coming together that he committed a crime. This Rambam, he's who knows what he committed? Who knows what he did? He killed someone. He stole, and they're coming to get him. The government's coming to get him, and they're so scared. And there's a meeting. There's a community board meeting. What to do? And this one says, "We're going to do this." And her father always got up and he defended the villain, the Rambam. She really thought It's a community board meeting. So there's a trial going on with a real person sitting in front of us. It's about to go to jail, be executed. Because she was 3-4 years old, whatever she was, maybe she's a little bit older. And she didn't understand that we're dealing with a person who died 700 years ago. And reading from a book, the Milchamta Shel Torah. So when I read that, that story really blew my mind. The way she wrote it up, the way she wrote it up also, I can't give it over to you whether she wrote it up. But that's what it means. Chovlin. Chovlin. The Lithuanian approach to the study of Talmud is an outgrowth of Bavel, of Chovlin, not pleasantness. Noyam. What are you? Oh, so nice. What are you saying? Oh, you're so nice. Everyone is so nice. When you take that approach, you're not going to get out the meat. You're not going to come to Oimkoy Sheldovar. Okay, the Talmud Yerushalmi is Bekitzer. It's a much smaller work. The Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Bavli is a much more massive work. The Talmud Bavli is what is studied all over the world. The Talmud Yerushalmi is not a priority. Today, Art School did a job on the Yerushalmi like none other. Art School, they translated the Yerushalmi into English. They elucidated it into English and into Hebrew. Rav Meir Zlotowitz. He felt that the crown jewel of Art School was not the Talmud Bavli. Was the Talmud Yerushalmi. He basically said, I don't know the exact words, that the Bavli people would have, you know, eventually people, someone would have done anyway. You know, the Bavli is studied, there are other people. There was Sincino before Art School, which is nothing compared to what Art School did. Not to put down
Chas Shalom. Sincino was more confusing than helpful.
Okay, it's not, no, the Sincino is inconsistent. There, every volume was done independently. So there's a very, very large degree of inconsistency. And it's very, very bekitzer. There are some very good volumes. Don't go kid yourself. Those days was all you had. Steinsaltz. There are a lot of things. But what Art School did is second to none. And now Masifta, what they did is just not to be believed. And they have the Shas Dublin. But the Yerushalmi, what?
Not to mention Steinsaltz.
Right, I said Steinsaltz. Okay. And they have already few editions. Steinsaltz already has already like three different, completely different editions of Bavli. Three completely different works. But in any event, but he really said this, is that Yerushalmi, what Art School did for the Yerushalmi is really the culmination of their talent, of everything that they've done. They drew from their experience and their resources and their talent to produce a Yerushalmi. They wrote a new Tzuras Hadaf. They completely rewrote, they redid the entire, it's their own Tzuras Hadaf. It's not to be believed. That in itself is mind-boggling. They made their own Tzuras Hadaf and how they, and the style, I mean, they've basically drawn from everything that they have done for the last 30 years to be able to produce a Yerushalmi, which no one touched, no one out there even scratched the surface.
It's a challenge. Because
amazing.
From what I understand, because there are so many variants in the Girsa.
Right, it's a whole different type of Gemara. Right now, I'm telling you this right now because it's extremely relevant, what I'm saying, because very, very soon, those who are learning Daf Yomi, only 2-3 weeks, are going to start Masechta Shkolim. And for some reason, unknown to us, Masechta Shkolim is part of the Seder Halimud of the Daf Yomi, which is really a Seder of Talmud Bavli. And somehow in Talmud Bavli, it snuck in into the Seder Halimud one Masechta from the Talmud Yerushalmi. Masechta Shkolim. Masechta Shkolim in the Seder Halimud of the Daf Yomi is not Talmud Bavli. It sticks out like a sore thumb. It's part of the Talmud Yerushalmi. How did Masechta Shkolim get inserted into the Vilna Shas? Get inserted into the Vilna Shas, a volume of Yerushalmi get inserted into the Talmud Bavli, which doesn't even have your classic commentators. There is no Rashi. There's no Tosis. It's a whole different ballgame. It's an entirely different Sefer. The language is very different. the way that everything is different. The whole thing, you were totally blown away. What in the world is this? What's it doing over here? No one even saw this before. And the dafim are massively long. It's almost impossible to learn a daf a day within the Yerushalmi. And there's one Masechta Shkolim. And it's definitely b'hashkacha pratis that we should learn. You should learn Masechta Shkolim, at least to get a taste, to understand this principle of what it says here in this pasuk, that there is Noyam and there are Choyvlim. Noyam is Talmud Yerushalmi, Choyvlim is Talmud Bavli. And when you learn these two Masechtas, to be able to appreciate, to see, to focus on this difference that the Talmidei Chacham has, as they argue and they debate in the Masechta Shkolim, which is one example of Talmud Yerushalmi, it's Noyam. They're not so intense. They're not all worked up. Whereas in Bavli, they're passionate, they're nasty. We know we have all these expressions in the Gemara. This Tana, he doesn't have a brain in his head. Ein loy moyach bekot kodoy. And this one, and they curse each other. It's violent. In the Yerushalmi, the passion runs so high, we find Amoraim cursed, mamash cursing each other. And saying things that if you would say today in yeshiva, they would take you out of the classroom, wash out your mouth with soap, and send you home and call up your parents. But in the Gemara, they just did this on the spot. And they did even more bizarre things. And you know, look at the Ravid. The Ravid and the Rambam. What do you think the Ravid? Where do you think the Ravid take a cue? When the Ravid, he writes about the Rambam. Ooh! Omar Avram, what the Ravid has to say, he really went over the top. He says things about the Rambam that even in the Gemara, the Amoraim wouldn't dare say to one another. But the Ravid certainly got his influence not from the Noyam. Not from the Yerushalmi.
One of the Hilchos Pesach, the Ravid says he wouldn't eat in the Rambam's house.
he says he also says he has like Ravid doesn't have a brain in his head. He says the most incredible things about the Rambam. But I want to explain to you why this. So I don't understand this. Rabbi Schmidman totally explained this to me. Is because you don't understand. The Rambam was a youngster. The Ravid, when the Ravid first came in contact with the Rambam, the Ravid was probably 80, 90 years old. He was a zokin, and the Rambam was like a child in his eyes. Was this kid, mamish, a child. How old was he? I don't know. He was a youngster. And he sees...
Well, the Rambam stopped writing. By the time he was in his 40s, he stopped already. He didn't write anymore because he got too busy being a doctor.
So it's not to be believed.
He wrote everything by the time he was in his early 40s. He finished writing.
Unbelievable. So he was this youngster. So you have over here someone who's 80, 90 years...
He wrote the Yonah Chazaka in his 20s.
In his 20s? Wow.
In his 20s, he wrote the Yonah Chazaka.
Really?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So could you imagine a guy 20 years old, you have over here a Rosh Yeshiva, the Gadol Hador, the undisputed Gadol Hador, who really knows everything. We're not talking about the Ravid, oh, you know, he's just a politician. We're talking over here the person, the Ravid, who is the undisputed Gadol Hador, spent his entire life, he knows Kol HaTorah Kula, from beginning to end, backwards and forwards. And he's 90.
The last thing he wrote was the Mor Nebuchim. That's the last thing he wrote.
How old was he when he wrote the Mor Nebuchim?
About 40.
In his 40s. So can you imagine the Ravid?
He was too busy being a doctor to all the great sultans. He couldn't write anymore. He had no time.
Unbelievable. Could you imagine the Ravid? He's 90 years old, and he's the undisputed Gadol Hador. There's nothing he doesn't know. And all of a sudden, he sees this kid, a 20-year-old. He wrote something, he wrote a kundris, and the Balabatim are intrigued. And they read, and whatever it says in this little kundris, that's what we're going to do. So the Ravid says, What are you doing? Who told you this? The Rambam. Who's the Rambam? They show the 90-year-old this kundris that a 20-year-old kid wrote. So what kind of garbage is this? You have to give context to how the Ravid could say, I'm not going to eat in the Rambam's house. This guy doesn't have a brain in his head. You have to understand the context of the Ravid using the sharp words. Well, when you're 90 years old and there's a 20-year-old that's pontificating, you speak about him like you talk about a child. You don't go speak with him with reverence. The Hilchos Rambam, it's a whole different league. It's a whole different backdrop. Okay, so this is based on. There's one more thing we want to point out about the. We once spoke about this difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli is a very different approach to Bavli and Yerushalmi. There are many different approaches. One approach is Kabbalah versus Halacha, Sisrei Torah versus rationalism. The Bavli is a rational sefer. It's for the mind. It has to make sense. We're not chapping malachim. We are focusing on pshat. Everything has to make logical sense. We have a halacha. We have the basic building blocks, basic principles. When we need to go further, we have to follow the rules. Follow the rules of logic in order to come to a conclusion that is sound. The Yerushalmi, when they develop halacha, they conclude the halacha, it's not built on the principles of logic. It's built on more esoteric rules. I can't give you at this moment examples. There are a lot of very good articles that illustrate different examples, but it's built upon Kabbalah, tradition,
Sisrei. Well, you could tell by looking at the Lashon. Nobody asked anybody to prove what they say. You know, this person tradition. Says this, this person says that, and it moves on. It doesn't say, what do you mean? Prove it to me.
Because it doesn't need to be proven, because it's tradition or it's right. Yoni Kabbalah. The principles, the conclusions, and how we look at the world is more of an esoteric, Kabbalistic approach to understanding the Torah. In Bavel, they focused on rationalism. The Torah has to make sense. Every halacha has to follow a set of rules. It's a scientific approach to the study of Torah. Look at Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef. Even though the Beis Yosef was in Eretz Yisrael, okay? But he only later in his life moved to Eretz Yisrael. And anyway, it's ridiculous, because that's what we're talking over here 1,000 years after the Talmud Yerushalmi. So that doesn't make any difference. But the Beis Yosef, what did he paskin? He took 3 Rishonim. It's a basic scientific approach. There's the Rambam, there's the Rosh, and the Rif. That's it. These are the 3 major league players. They paskin halacha. We'll follow the majority. Wherever we'll find that the majority says that this is the halacha, that's the halacha. 3 people, Rambam, Rosh, and Rif, Vizehu. That's it. Follow the majority. That's a very scientific approach. That type of approach is built upon the principle of the Talmud Bavli. Rav Avadya Yosef is exactly the same thing. Rav Avadya Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, what did he do? He didn't just have the Rambam, the Rosh, and the Rif. He basically went through every single Rishon he can dig up. He thoroughly researched every single issue, and he counted. It's 5 against 3, it's 9 against 2, whatever the majority is, Vizehu. Follow the majority. You have a collection of legitimate, accepted Rishonim. You follow the majority. It's a scientific approach to the study of Torah. Everything has to make sense, and we have complications. We just add up the numbers. Acharei Rabim Lahatris.
Well, the problem that they had with that is all the people he quoted from were
Sfardim. Well, two of the 3. The Rambam.
Well, the Rosh had a Litvish Sricha, right. But he became a Rav by the Sfardim.
Okay, so it's also saying it's also tilted. It's also slanted.
His sock was
slanted. So that was the Rambam. The problem was that two of the three were Sfardim for sure. The Rif and the Rambam and the Rosh, even if you'll say that he's from Ashkenaz, but it's 2
he
against
was.
One.
He was the Rosh. Basically, his thought process was Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz, because that's where he grew up and got his smicha. The Rashba gave him his, told him to come to Spain and I'll get you a shtel. He needed a job. So that's
why the Ramah. So the Ramah came along and the Ramah said it's not fair. Zelo fair. That the Beis Yosef was coming to make a Shulchan Aruch based upon the majority, which the 3 players are Sfardim. So he began to write the Ramah. He wrote his paper. He wrote the Minig Ashkenaz. But the Ramah was just as guilty as just guilty, because the Ramah, Ashkenaz, is not universal, it's not uniform. There's Ashkenaz in Poland, and there's Ashkenaz in France, Ashkenaz in Germany, and there's Ashkenaz in other parts of the world. And when the Ramah wrote his Hagos on the Beis Yosef to present the Minig Ashkenaz, he was only presenting the Minig Ashkenaz in Krakow, in Poland. He wasn't presenting the Minig Ashkenaz as it was practiced in France and Germany and other major Jewish centers that practiced Minig Ashkenaz. So he also was guilty of the same crime, and that's why.
Weren't most of the Ashkenazi Yidden in Poland at that
time? No, not I don't know the answer exactly, but it was not. But it doesn't matter. Not everyone. Just because they lived in Poland, not everyone was their tradition. They were Jews in other parts.
They moved on. They had their Hungary. They had a couple of the original Ashkenaz was France, but when the Jews were kicked out of France, they went to
all
Germany,
over the place.
And that's why we consider Ashkenaz Germany. Originally, Ashkenaz was meant to be France. That's what it was called. Ashkenaz, France, not Germany. But then it became...
It spread
Germany,
all over.
Of course, they moved. And then Poland.
But the Ramah was writing the Minig Ashkenaz in Poland. But the Minig Ashkenaz in Poland was not the Minig Ashkenaz in France, Germany, Hungary, and
it
other parts.
These things in Russia. That's why the Sephardis didn't change for 1,000 years. But the cultures mixed for the Ashkenaz Jews, the cultures mixed.
Look, one of the most classic things we'll talk about a little bit later on is saying Hallel the night of Pesach. Saying Hallel. So the Ramah says that you don't say Hallel. You're not supposed, but yet you see today so many Ashkenazim who do say Hallel on the night of Pesach. Okay, so just because the Ramah presented Minig Ashkenaz, it was not Minig Ashkenaz of everyone's Minig Ashkenaz. Any event, the point we want to make over here is that there's a fundamental difference between Noyam of the Yerushalmi versus the Choivlim of the Bavel, because in Yerushalmi, it was based upon an esoteric approach to the study of Torah, whereas in Bavel, it was a rational approach. There's another very big fundamental difference, and that is the mindset. Let me give you an example. What is a typical Gemara, a typical piece of Gemara? You have Mishnayos. You have the Shisha Sidri Mishnah. And the Gemara starts off with a Mishnah, presents the Mishnah, and then the Gemara immediately asks the question, wait a minute, what's going on here? The Mishnah here in this Masechta is a direct contradiction to a Mishnah in a different Masechta. That's like a classic piece of Gemara. You have two Mishnais, and the two Mishnais appear to contradict one another. So here's the difference between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, what it does is, no problem. The Mishnah Masechta A follows Rabbi Meir, and the Mishnah in Masechta B follows Rabbi Yehuda. Two different Tanoim. It's a machloikis Tanoi. Right off the bat. We're not trying to make peace. There's no peace here. This is one opinion, this is another opinion. And therefore, you're right, you are correct, there is a contradiction, but the answer is two different Tanoim. In the Bavli, they don't do that. In the Bavli, the goal is, we want both Mishnayos to be attributed to the same person. But there's a contradiction. So they have a magic word, a magic expression. The Bavli invented a magic expression called Hocha b'may askinan. The case in this Masechta is limited to this particular instance. Whereas the case in the other Masechta is a different type of case. But it's the same author. It's the same, it's Rabbi Meir. Everyone agrees. Hocha b'may askinan. It's an entirely different approach to dealing with contradictions. The Yerushalmi, we don't want to limit. So you have to cut corners somewhere. So either you can cut corners by limiting the opinion. We will expand the scope of the case to to make it as broad as possible, but we will attribute it to a limited opinion. Or what we can do is just the opposite. We're going to expand the scope of authorship to everyone, but we're going to limit the case at hand to a specific example, Hocha b'may askinan. Now, does that approach lead to milchama? In a sense, it does. Because when your goal is, we all have to be on the same page. Then you're gonna fight. You're gonna fight to figure out what's going on. Because if your goal is
consensus,
winner takes all. If you shall me, we're not looking to fight. So you go your way, you go your way. We're gonna put up a big wall. We're gonna have a wall here, a wall there. We don't want to fight. We don't want to fight. Everyone, stay on your side. You go. This mission is this manda amar. This mission is this manda amar. Different worlds, different people. There's no fighting. Noya, pleasant. It's not so pleasant when you live in your own little world, but at least
you can't come to a decision either.
There's no engagement. There's no violent engagement. But when in the Bavli, no, you have to agree to me. If I wear a mask, you're going to wear a mask, whether you like it or not. If I don't wear a mask, then you don't wear a mask. Someone showed me a sign in a store. I don't even know which state this was. And they were on the store, on the sign. Wherever I go here in Flatbush, there are big signs that say, no mask, no entry. You see those signs? All different types of signs. No mask, no entry, wear a mask. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, you don't walk into a store today without wearing a mask. Okay, it's many shuls also. You don't wear a mask. You have a shotgun.
In Bar Park, they have signs also like that, but nobody listens anyway.
Okay, but then someone showed me a sign that says, "Don't enter our store with a muzzle on your face. Don't spread your fear." Okay, not allowed to walk in this store with a muzzle. Don't spread your fear. Okay, that's an attitude. You have to be like me. I don't respect your opinion. Okay? If I wear a mask, you wear a mask. Or if I don't, you don't. That's an attitude of Bavel. In Bavel, we all got to be the same. Everyone has to be the same. Oh, but we have a contradiction. Hocha b'may askinan. In Eretz Yisrael, Noyam, listen, mind your own business. Mind business. In this store, we don't wear masks. So, but this is us. You do your thing. Everyone do whatever you want. Everyone do whatever you want. Mind your own business. Ha'iluchud v'ha'iluchud. They're not looking to engage in, not looking to win you over. We're not trying to win you over to our side. This Mishnah is your mayor, and this Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Shalom al Yisrael. In Bavel, no. You have to agree to me whether you like it or not. You have to come to my side. And the only way it doesn't work, you know, sometimes it's irreconcilable. Oh, we have a solution. Hocha b'may askinan. Okay, it's a whole different attitude. And when the attitude is different, this leads until you reach that conclusion of hocha b'may askinan, you're going to engage in very serious debate, very serious dialogue, which we're calling choyvlim, the milchamta shelter. Choy, want to say something?
When you were talking about masks, I was reminded of last week in the daf, and I said, obviously, it's not a good idea to wear two masks.
What do you mean?
Pairs.
Oh, Zugos. You're not allowed to do anything in two. Zugos. So Fauci is telling us we should wear now two masks.
That's why I said.
Zugos. You're not allowed to do anything in two. It's a sakana to wear two masks. You have to wear three masks. Has to be an odd
only
number.
If he's
odd number of masks. What?
Only if he's makbid about zugos.
So he's saying a new yisoid that zuga is only the tafiyom. You have to be mak. Man to kopit kaptin and lay. Man to loy kopit loy kaptin. If you're not makbid, so then you can wear two masks.
Well, it's actually avot kosev vashmishi viachri
avenei. All right. So these are some of the basic principles. The principles of choivlim versus noyam. Talmud Bavli, Rastamid Yerushalmi, as we explain, in Eretz Yisrael, it's a more Kabbalistic approach. In Eretz Yisrael, it's to separate the Tanoim, whereas in Bavel, it's a more rational approach, and there we come with Halacha Mayaskinan. The principle of Melchamta Shel Torah in Bavel, it's a Kabbalistic concept where through the Melchamta Shel Torah, then there's no need for there to be a real war in this world, whatever that means. That's something a little bit over my head. And what else do we mention about the nature of Chayiv and Bavel? I don't remember anymore, but that's basically the principle. It's a very popular Maimon Chazal. This Chazal, it's a Gemara. It's a Ferish Gemara, and Some want to claim, this is a very interesting idea, this is a whole interesting discussion, and that is many, many times there is a disagreement, la halacha, between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And although we studied 99% the Bavli, many times in halacha, in the world of halacha, you will discover that the halacha follows the Yerushalmi. There are many different issues, and interesting is why, if the Talmud Yerushalmi is not something which we embrace in our study, and we study Alasuke Shmaitza Liba de Hilchasa, and our primary study is the Bavli, not the Yerushalmi, why then do we find a significant number of times in Shulchan Aruch a halacha that does not appear in the Bavli? This is not the conclusion of the Talmud Bavli, and yet in Shulchan Aruch it says this is the halacha. That's not what it says in the Bavli. And why is the Mechaber paskening like this? And then when you start doing some research, you discover that Yerushalmi disagrees with the Bavli, and the majority opinion of the way the Beis Yosef, he takes from the majority of the three, the Rambam, the Rosh, and the Rif, they are following the Shita of the Yerushalmi. And that is very interesting, is why indeed should that be the case. But there's also a lot of very interesting mysterious things. There are certain things that only appear in the Yerushalmi, and there are many things that only appear in the Bavli. I've got some examples. There are certain halachas that you can search all 2,711 pages of the Talmud Bavli, and you're not going to find it anywhere. There's not even a remez to certain particular halachas, but it's mentioned in the Yerushalmi. So generally today, almost every single thing that we do, every single minhag, every nuance of our life, our religious life, is found somewhere in the Talmud Bavli. Everything we do, minhagim, halacha, everything, it's all in the Bavli. It's all there. It's all rooted in the Bavli. But there are a few things that are not. And why? So where does it come from? If it's not in the Bavli, what we made this up? You don't have a right to make up new minhagim. And the answer to many of those things that you cannot find in the Bavli, you will discover it's in the Yerushalmi. It's rooted in the Yerushalmi. So halacha l'maisa, we're not just observant in the world of halacha from the Talmud Bavli, we also embrace the Yerushalmi, and there's a musa haskel in that, because the Bavli is pure chavola. It's a violent way of life, the Bavli. We embrace in our life a little noam. You need a little softness sometimes to sweeten the harshness of life. If we only followed a pure, unadulterated approach to life based upon the Bavli, and anything that's said in the Yerushalmi will be thoroughly rejected and pushed out the window, you know what that would mean? We would be called chayvlim. We would be labeled destroyers. Jewish people, Orthodox Jews, would be called, they're a bunch of chayvlim, because they exclusively live their lives based upon Talmud Bavli. And the Talmud Bavli, it says, a pasuk in Zechariah, prophet, he said about the Talmud Bavli, according to the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, that the words are, Eilu Talmidei Chacham Shebe'er, Choyvlim, Eilu Talmidei Chacham Shebe'bavel, Shemechablim, Zelo Zebahalacha. So that would mean that if we would exclusively follow the Talmud Bavli, we would be in a lot of trouble, because then we would be labeled, rightfully so, by Zechariah as violent people. Shemechablim zezeh. And you know, you can dilute it, you can dilute what this means in different ways, but the bottom line is, therefore, it's not for nothing that the Poskim go out of their way almost desperately to incorporate elements of the Talmud Yerushalmi into our daily living, into our daily halacha, because we also need a little ni'imus in life. If you only have a life of chavala, it's not fun. A little ni'imus, a little sweetness can go a long way in making the chavala into a very different type of approach. Amichol, what were you saying?
Saying about the word. First of all, there is something called malachei chavala, but in modern Hebrew, mechablim are terrorists.
Yeah, that's right. It's exactly the point. It's a very nasty term. Like they say, there's a very important one.
Chaval sheze kacha. Chaval.
Chaval means same word. Chaval. Oyvei. Chaval. So there's another very critical piece of Gemara.
There is a bitui in Hebrew. Chavalim nafluli banimim.
That's the different word. Chavalim is pleasantness.
Chavalim is portions.
Portions. Also. Portions. Also a portions. Portion.
What? So what? You have chevel, a string.
A rope.
A rope is also a chevel. So what does that got to do with?
Okay, there's one more Maimon Chazal that also ties this together in an extremely important way. Chazal said that a Talmud Chacham, who's better? Who's better? The Talmidei Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael. I do not remember where this piece of Gemara is, but the Gemara analyzes the difference, the scholarship of the Talmidei Chacham of Bavel versus those in Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara's conclusion is that the Talmidei Chacham of Eretz Yisrael are better. A racist statement. The Talmidei Chacham of Eretz Yisrael are superior. Their scholarship, their depth, their knowledge is superior to the Talmidei.
Well, that's why it says Shoful Marova. A lot of times you have, they wanted to know what they did in Eretz Yisrael. And there's one thing, I can't remember also where it is. I learned it not long ago. There was one machlokis, and it goes in the Gemara, it goes definitely against the Beferish Yerushalmi, and the Rishonim discuss it and say they didn't know, had they known what they said in Yerushalmi, they never would have said what they said in the Bavli.
Incredible. That's a shocking thing to say.
Yeah. He said, the answer is they didn't know what they said. They just didn't know about it.
That's a shocking thing.
Had they known about it, they wouldn't have had this machlokis.
Okay, so this piece of the other piece of Gemara is a very important Gemara. The Gemara there makes an analysis, the Gemara concludes, Rabbi Mayeski just pointed out that it was accepted that the Talmidei Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact that they were Noyam, and they did not engage in this intensity, this intense debate, they were superior. Their knowledge, their depth. Why is that so? It's possibly because of the Kedusha Sa'aretz. Whatever it is, they were superior. But then the Gemara makes a shocking statement, which is very critical. And the Gemara says, but, big but, a product of Bavel, who was born and bred and went through the system of Bavel, his mind has been formed and nurtured with the system of Bavel, the Chayvlim, who makes Aliyah, who later, after he's gone through the system, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he now sits down to learn, he is way beyond anyone in Eretz Yisrael. He is in a league by himself. No one can go near him. The Gemara does not say that if a Ben Eretz Yisrael goes to Bavel, he becomes better. He does not. He has this as a Yerida. If someone in Eretz Yisrael who went through the system of Torah in Eretz Yisrael descends to Bavel, nothing. Nothing special. Let me learn a new approach to learning Torah. I learned in Eretz Yisrael, and now I'm a product of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, product means you've been trained, you've been molded, you've been shaped by the approach of Eretz Yisrael, and you then go to Bavel. It's a Yerida. Nothing. No one's going to pay any attention to you. You're not going to become anything special by now trying to adapt to the system of Eretz Yisrael with the background of Eretz Yisrael. But if you start off with the system, the approach of the people in Bavel, and then after you mature, you come to Eretz Yisrael and you take with you your experience and your training and the reasoning, and then you delve into the approach of study of Torah as they do in Eretz Yisrael, no one can go near you. You are in a league to yourself. And the same way that's true as far as scholarship, it's also true with regard to ne'imos and chayvlim. A person starts out in Bavel, engages in this violent approach. It rubs off on your midos. If you're violent in learning, you'll be violent in life. If you'll beat up your chavrusa, rachmana litzlan, you can beat up your wife. Chas v'shalom. Okay? It's a very scary thing. If they're called chayvlim in Torah, you know, it affects your whole life. But if you then go to Eretz Yisrael and you get a taste of the ne'imos of Eretz Yisrael, with your background of chayvlim, you become so sweet. You become such a pleasant person that no one can go near you. No one can touch you. You are a class by
itself.
It's
part of the itself. Idea of Marichita and Okeharit. It's sort of a little bit.
So you're saying a different idea. Much. You're saying that in Eretz Yisrael they were Sinais. They had Yedias.
Right.
And above all, they were on Oikir Harem. Is that really true? I don't know. Is that really true? I don't know if that's really. I don't know if that's really.
It smacks a little bit of that because they had more of a kapolos, you know, because they were in Eretz Yisrael longer, as you started to mention.
Okay.
They had more tradition because they were there. And in Bavel was more spread out.
Okay. The bottom line is, Bavel has harshness, Eretz Yisrael has ne'imus, and as we see in the world of halacha, you have to have both. You can't just be a chayvel. You have to have a little ne'imus also. And adrabah, when you add a little ne'imus to the chayvel, it transforms the chayvelim into a whole new creature, which Chazal praise as being the true shalom, the true complete person. Everything in life is about synthesis, balance, synthesis. There is what to be valued in the chayvlim, and there's what to be valued in the ne'imus, in noyam, but each one by itself is not sufficient. You have to have that combination to know when to be in a state of chayvlim and when to be in a state of ne'imus, and in the world of halacha, we do that. We embrace very much the piskei halacha of the Yerushalmi, of noyam, into our daily lives. Okay, we're going to take a short break. Afterwards, we're going to do something about the Seder. I want to do something a little bit different today, a little bit off the topic type of idea. You'll see what I mean. I'll leave it as a surprise for a few moments. What we're going to do, it'll be a platform to discuss many different parts of the Seder. And we'll come to that in a few moments after we get a cup of coffee.